Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
It's a 1-year membership in the Jelly of the Month Club.
Okay. Clark, it's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
That it is, Edward. That it is indeed.
Andy Dirt Johnson.
Well, I don't know, Scott. You're as healthy as a horse.
Yeah. Clydesdale.
Okay, look, so what? You put on a little weight.
A little weight? Does this look like a little weight to you?
And Brendan Sprague.
Fragile. It must be Italian.
I think that says fragile, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Kiss my ass. Kiss his ass. Kiss your ass. Happy Hanukkah.
The Fan.
Hey, let's do this. Final hour. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader. 1080 The Fan, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app. Kiss live on ass. YouTube.
Kiss your ass.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody. We got a nice little beef brewing on ESPN this morning.
Oh, God.
For those who didn't see at the end of the Tennessee, everybody had probably turned the game off at this point because it was over in a blowout.
They have mandates to do this to get people to care about their programming.
I think they do. Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler started taking shots at everybody on the First Take desk. Because they said Ryan Day should be on the hot seat if they don't win, blah, 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 fire him, all that stuff. That it was a pretty rational thing because he lost to Michigan again.
You mean what most of America was wondering going into the game?
And I think at the end of the broadcast, Fowler and Herbstreit were basically like, I wonder who First Take's going to fire now that Ryan Day won. Huh? Who are we going to fire now? And Shannon Sharp basically went on First Take this morning and was like, keep my name out your mouth.
Wow.
If you attack me one more time, I'm coming after you, but I'll take the high road for now. So things are going great over at the Worldwide Leader this morning.
We should do that more on the stage. And be like, oh yeah, Danny Dusty, keep her names up your mouth.
Mention me one more time, Dusty. You have to deal with this, all right? I'm gonna scissor kick you.
I wonder who Isaac's gonna fire tomorrow. What a stupid beef.
Oh, lovely time in the world of college football. Quarterfinals are around the corner. This will be our only show of the week, so we'll have some more time to dive into these coming up, obviously, next Monday, Tuesday. And then the Penn State-Boise State game will be next Tuesday, and then everybody will be playing on the 1st.
And do you like the standalone games?
I do. I'm okay with it.
I didn't like the Friday game.
The Friday night game?
It kind of got in my way.
Well, you got stuff to do. I get that. I'm a procrastinator as well, so this time of year I'm like, damn it, I got, you know, X, Y, and Z I need to finish and all this football that I got to fit into my window. New Year's Eve, though, I like because it's a 4:30 game on New Year's Eve.
Mm.
So it's not a night. It's not too late for us. It's like, that's perfect timing.
Hmm.
So if you want to do something for New Year's, which I most certainly will not be doing, it's over by 7:30. And so that makes it manageable on the West Coast. A more likely upset, I put this poll question up last night, Boise State over Penn State or Arizona State over Texas?
I think it's Arizona State over Texas.
Arizona State.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's no disrespect to Boise State. They'll get their chance to prove me wrong.
How much of that has to do with faith in Arizona State, and how much of that has to do with a lack of faith in either Texas or confidence in Penn State?
I think it's a combo of Arizona State is a little more talented than most of America thought, and I also think they're really well coached.
Yeah.
They're disciplined, they're creative, they're ballsy, and they're tough. They're like physically tough. It's one thing to beat Iowa State. I think what we can all agree, Iowa State is well coached. Matt Campbell's really highly regarded. That's not a soft Iowa State team. And I watched that game and I'm like, damn, they just beat them up after that early score. So it's a combo. It's a combo of there is a thing with Texas, and we saw it a little bit this weekend against Clemson. They just had more talent. When they get a little three and out-ish, a little dicey, you kind of feel whatever is that Ewers, Arch Manning, Sarkisian combination. You kind of feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really quantify it other than to say that.
Just feels a little uncomfortable, a little uneasy.
Yes, and there may be a door opening, like a little back door open there for Arizona State to kind of sneak in the way Clemson did. It's not going to be in Austin, and I think Arizona State fan is going to travel well for this thing. They have been very supported this year by that alumni and fan base. So I think it's more that. The Penn State-Boise State stuff, I would love to be wrong. I'm rooting like hell for Boise and Jainty, future Pac-12 team. I just think eventually in a controlled dome environment, that Penn State team is their horses are going to be too many, no pun intended, for those horses.
Yeah, that is the game, by the way, on New Year's Eve. Do you agree, Swags? You're going to Arizona State as well?
I think Arizona State, especially if they get their lead wide receiver healthy.
He's had a month now. I don't know exactly where he's at.
I don't know how severe the injury was. Yeah. It didn't seem like it was.
He was in a sling in the Big 12 title game. Yeah. Jordan Tyson, by the way, is who we're talking about. He had 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns.
But if they have him, I feel like they can be a little bit more diverse going up against Texas. You can't just, obviously, for Penn State, it's like, okay, we got to stop Jainty. If we stop Jainty, then we can feel like we can handle the rest of whatever they might throw at us.
Yeah.
And it's one-dimensional. I think Arizona State has more of a puncher's chance. I also think Dillingham's more willing to go for the kitchen sinks, the stuff that I thought Cignetti would learn from his first game. Yep. You can't. Their first play, what do? They try to run it up the middle. I'm like, did you learn? It was over right then. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, I was such an idiot on the show thinking you would learn something.
Yeah. I can't blame you for wanting. You were hoping a good game.
I mean, he should have.
Happen.
You were right that should have happened. He just, for whatever reason, did not learn the lesson.
It's freezing ass cold. They're massive, and your first play is to, fullback dive up the middle. You're not running it up the middle on them.
They got a break, too, because Notre Dame threw a pick on their first play of the game on a tip ball. And you're like, oh, here comes Indiana. And then they threw it right back to him two plays later.
It was so amazing. Had Rourke not thrown that interception, had they scored, even if it was a field goal.
7-0 in that moment.
Had SMU taken advantage. And they got an early lead. And the crowds had a sense to just, oh, okay, these are the playoffs. How different possibly those games could have gone. So,
yeah.
So I think that has to be factored into before we go reshaping the entire playoff format. I don't think they need to go extreme as what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would understand why you'd reseed because of the reaction, but like also, I don't want to overreact and act like next year can't be different.
Reseeding to me isn't necessary if you fix the top four bye thing.
Well, I'm saying if you were to tell me, we're not going to change. We're going to keep the format exactly as is. I understand the blowback to that, given what we saw. I also wouldn't be upset if they didn't change it. Just in this, we did dream scenario stuff. I want the top four teams to host a playoff game. They won't probably ever have that. And we want to kind of seed it to what the rankings are instead of like, oh, conference champion, you get a bye, right? If you did this next year, I wouldn't be mad because...
Yeah.
You cannot overreact to the point of like, oh, we need to change everything because we had four bad games this weekend. What if next year we had three of the four are good?
They very well could be.
And it could be
blowouts again. Who knows? Yeah. We've had years in the 14 playoff where there were blowouts, and some years it was close.
Yeah, the more I noodled with it, I think, okay, let's your conference, your top four ranked conference champions get in. So if they're outside of the top 12, they get in. Clemson gets in, whatever. They get in. Then seed them 1-12. And I could live with the one caveat, if you are a conference champion, but you are playing a first-round game, you get it at home. There's got to be some reward for winning the conference championship, even if you're the worst seed.
So you felt that way like about Clemson this year. Clemson wasn't even ranked the top 12, that they would have deserved to host a home playoff game with three losses?
There has to be some incentive overall for keeping the conference championship game.
See, and to me, I think that's there. Like, I agree with the overall sentiment, but I don't think we need to overhaul the entire thing. To me, just the easy fix is you're into the playoff, and then you're just seated where you're seated. So if you win a comp, like Clemson was not ranked in the top 12. I think they were the 15th ranked team or whatever at the
NBA
end of the year.
Did that for a while, was if you won your division, even if you were the lower seed, you got to host the first
playoff game or whatever. Yeah,
court advantage in the first round of the playoff.
The only thing that will stick in my bonnet, if you will, because it's affecting my team, is that what we argued for months has happened, that Penn State has an easier path to the semifinal than Oregon does. And that's laughable. Mm-hmm. They got to play SMU at home. Oregon would have trounced SMU playing at Autzen Stadium this weekend. And then you get Boise State in a neutral environment where you're a 10.5-point favorite in that game. You're not guaranteed to win. I mean, you can't lose.
Yep.
You're a 10.5. Oregon is an underdog in their first playoff game this year after going 13-0, and you might have to play the best team in the country. That's a ridiculous system that needs to get that part of it gets redrawn. Nothing else needs to be changed in my mind.
And I'm with you that we need to have more home games. I don't know how long the contracts are that they would have to undo with the New Year's Six bowl games, because that's part of it, is they're under contract. To get out of them probably costs hundreds of millions of dollars.
I'm sure it does.
It's not just, here's $10 million, go away. I think there's huge money on the line that gets everybody's attention.
I just think it's an odd thing. It's an odd visual, I think, as a sports fan. And
if everybody's moving to an NFL model, then let's move to an NFL model.
That's kind of how I feel about it. And I understand that these bowl games, the pageantry, like you've, as a sport, kind of already killed bowl games, to be honest with you. I haven't watched a second other than like a highlight I saw on social media. I hate to disappoint people. I don't watch UNLV Cal. I don't care.
What the hell is the matter with you?
Right. And there's
actually a bowl game that's starting right now.
There is. Yeah, there's two of them.
I know
on
the Cougs and Syracuse are playing because I saw a commercial. I'm not going to watch that game. Yeah. I hate to tell you that. Don't care. It's not relevant in my life in any way. You've already killed it. So, like, I am not beholden to old people that wear jackets saying we matter a lot in that sport. They don't anymore. And so, like, I think Oregon fan, I think Arizona State fan, I think of Boise State. You got rewarded and you also didn't get rewarded. And it sucks to not be able to have a home venue for those teams. And that's the unfortunate part of all this. I wanted to ask you before I lost the thought, Notre Dame beating Indiana and beating them maybe that way didn't shock me. I don't think it surprised you. It caught him a little off guard, but that's because of Cignetti.
That was Indiana, not Notre. Yes. I knew what Notre Dame was going to do.
I'm now wondering how much I undervalue, I guess, the physical nature of Notre Dame, because now they've got a game against Georgia where I'm leaning smart in defense over the quarterback question marks of Georgia. But it's like a 1.5-point spread.
It's Georgia's favored by 1.5.
And if Notre Dame gets through that game, you start to kind of wonder aloud, like, oh my God, if you beat Georgia and
they win a national title.
Yes.
Yeah.
Path is there.
It definitely is there. I think a big question will be, what does Georgia look like offensively with Gunnar Stockton in? I also, the hard thing for me in the opening weekend, I was excited to watch all the games. They ended up being duds. I have a hard time analyzing some of them because, like, I'm not going to Kirk Herbstreit. Indiana belonged in the college football playoff. Indiana was not one of the 12 best teams in the country. They just weren't.
We kind of knew it, but they went through their resume.
They belonged in. They deserved to be in. They went 11-1. I have no issue with them making it, but there is a difference in saying that's truly one of the 12 best teams. If they had Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State on their regular season schedule, they're a 9-3 team and they're not sniffing a playoff because they just got overwhelmed at the line of scrimmage in all of those games. And so that's the hard part that I have with Notre Dame. As good as an impressive and dominant as they looked outside of the final 4 minutes where they gave up an onside kick and a couple of tutties, that is such a jump from going Indiana line of scrimmage to Georgia line of scrimmage.
I know. That
is such a massive jump in terms of talent, depth, and overall size
and
strength.
That's why I'm taking Georgia. But
that it's I'm not saying it's impossible for them.
No.
I cannot wait to watch that game. It should be a ton of fun. It's on after Ohio State, Oregon on New Year's Day. But I think you're set up for two awesome games in the quarterfinal. And then a hope and a prayer, like, give me one other one. Give me Arizona State, Texas being close, or give me Boise State, Penn State being close, and I'm thrilled with that
weekend. Yeah, the whole format, boy, if Boise State or Arizona State could pull it off, then
it shuts a lot of, I mean, that would be nice in a brief moment to shut some people up.
All the rhetoric and nonsense then tamps down.
I think we're going to get three out of the, I hope to be wrong about one of those. I really do. I think we're going to get three of the four really good games.
Yeah.
I do. I really think Texas is vulnerable. I think Arizona State, we look at them as if they're just one player, and he is an amazing player, by the way.
Yeah.
They're tough. They're well coached. That matters in these
moments.
They're
resilient. They've had some big comebacks when it looks like they were put away.
Yep.
Dillingham will go into the bag.
Yes, he will.
To come up with stuff offensively.
I think the other thing about those two teams, too, that you couldn't really say, like, Indiana was a fun story this year. Who's Indiana's best player?
Yeah, I don't know,
it's hard to answer. Like, it's like, who's SMU's best player? Who do they lean on, right? Like, that's the hard...
Jennings, I mean, Jennings.
It should have been, but he was terrible.
Jennings, yeah.
That's the at least interesting part to me about these games is that, like, Boise State has the best running back in the country.
Yes.
Cam Scataboo can, like, single-handedly carry a defense for 15 yards at any given moment. And yes. So they got guys that are like, all right, you can rely on that guy for a bit. And then maybe the rest of the team kind of wakes up
right.
And make plays around him, where I didn't really ever feel like Indiana or SMU or some of those teams had, like, Tennessee had their guy. It was Samson. And then he went out early in the game. And you're like, all right, well, there goes your offense.
The best player.
Boise State and Arizona State have it.
100% right there. And the other takeaway, too, is from those games, despite how bad they were. And I know you want to do a peekaboo here in Oregon, but, what's the one player takeaway from all of those games, right? Well, it's probably love for Notre Dame. My God, that 98-yard run was
I didn't know he was that fast. I knew he was powerful and
strong. He had a run against USC that opened my eyes, and I'm like, that dude is going to wreck some teams the rest of the way.
Another guy who could and probably should go to the NFL early, but he's only a sophomore, so he's got to stick around another year.
Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, holy crap, man. He's the best player on their team.
He's a man. He's a man.
He's 19 years old.
He's 19. He's a man.
Gino's cousin.
Yeah, what are we going to do with that guy on New Year's Day? Let's get into that a little bit coming up next, because that's we got Oregon and Ohio State. That matchup is set.
I got to tell you where I'm leaning, man. I got to tell you where I'm leaning today.
Nobody's giving us a chance.
Nobody's.
Where's the line? We'll let you know. I got some odds and ends coming up bottom of the hour, including baseball losing a legend over the weekend. So we'll get to that stuff. A quick peekaboo, though, next on Oregon Ohio State on 1080 The Fan. Just Friends. All-time classic.
Underrated Christmas movie, by the way.
All-time classic.
Underrated.
Definitely underrated Christmas movie. Well,
Jamie.
He puts his old retainer in. sitting around Saturday night, I'm like, hey, I wonder who Oregon's going to play. And then like 45 seconds into the game, I'm like, oh, okay, it's going to be Ohio State. That didn't take long to figure that one out. They had the opening drive where they got a sack on third down. You're like, uh-oh, and then there was a face mask, and then Ohio State went on to score a touchdown. You're like, all right, that didn't last very long.
They're throwing face mask penalties again.
Yes, they are.
A couple weeks,
now
they
we're
back.
On it. They now count again as a 15-yard penalty.
Darnold got one against the Seahawks.
He did. We missed a few of those a few weeks back. Oregon and Ohio State, 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
New Year's Day.
I'm excited for this.
Week from Wednesday. What's our early look? By the way, for those wondering, Oregon is, they opened as a 1.5 underdog to Ohio State. It has already been bet up to 2.5, so it's almost to a field goal now. A lot of money coming in on the Buckeyes.
This is a tough game, and I think the opinions today shared by us, I know yours are never going to change because of the shirt you're wearing. If you told me my opinion changes 4 more times between now and that kick, I won't be shocked at all. Like, we do shows on the 30 and 31st. I don't know what I'm going to say. We'll find out. I kind of weirdly, and I can't explain this, I left Friday saying, I don't know about that coaching, man. I was never in question about the talent of Ohio State still giving a damn. And Chip Kelly's tweak from I have to run the football to I've got great weapons that I can just throw all day to, that had to have just been a big sigh of relief for Buckeye fan. Like, thank you, God, for recognizing where our strengths are. I'm curious what the 2 weeks off is going to mean for Oregon, the rust versus rest, all that stuff. If that's Ohio State, and that's a big if, I think I kind of lean the Buckeyes a little bit today.
Love it.
But I think this is going to be much like the first game. It's going to be who has the weird turnover, who has maybe the dumb play. Is it going to be Howard again not knowing when to slide to get the timeout? Is there a questionable call on one team versus the other? Even if I lean Ohio State, you have to just assume that game, no matter what, is going to be a lot like the first one.
I've seen some people joke that Oregon should wear their Webfoot jerseys from the 2016 Washington game mixed with a Michigan helmet just to throw them off. Because I think if we learned anything about Ohio State this weekend, and really in the last month or so, first what they did to Indiana, then you lose to Michigan, and then you go out and you do this to Tennessee at home in a playoff game, that they clearly have some weird mental bugaboo when it comes to playing that maize and blue team. They cannot figure it out. It's two in their kitchen. They become a different version of themselves.
Right.
They don't know how to operate when they play Michigan. When they play anybody else, it's not a problem for them.
Yeah.
And I think my takeaway, honestly, like, I'm obviously going to pick Oregon to win the game. What the hell? Beat their ass once. Let's go beat them again.
Absolutely.
it's ridiculous my team has to play Ohio State in the quarterfinals. I will continue to maintain that, and I will argue that again next week. Mm-hmm. I think my biggest takeaway is whoever wins that game is going to win a national championship. Really? I think they're the two best teams in the country. Not to take Texas is great. Georgia's awesome. Notre Dame's got an elite defense.
They'll get to prove it.
I think when it comes to complete balance on offense, mm-hmm. being able to play defense at a high level, like all the things that you need to be able to do to win a title game and to be balanced to do it, I think they're the two best teams in the country. And I think whoever wins that game will beat Texas or Arizona State and will beat whoever comes out of the other side of the bracket.
Can I ask you quickly, watching Ohio State, kind of pivot game plan wise, because I've seen them throw it, but I've also seen them just like continue to force this run situation that's just not happening largely. I thought when he ran it, they ran it at perfect times. Like,
well, they threw to ran to open up the pass,
yes,
or they threw to open up the run.
Yeah. Right. And I thought it was well timed that way. I this isn't to try to get you off the pick. You're not going to, and you shouldn't. Just seeing them do that with Jeremiah Smith.
I mean, they did it, honestly, in the first game. Go back and look.
I know Smith had a big game.
He had
in
a huge game. Howard had a huge game against Oregon.
I just wonder, though, like how differently the calls are going to be in certain moments this time versus what they were the previous time that they played.
Yeah, the hard part that I have with that, there's Ohio State's going to score a ton of points on Oregon. Their offense is legit when
they
do that.
Bet the over in this game is what I would do.
Bet the over. The first game was, what, 32-31 was the final, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah,
somewhere in that
correct,
range?
Yeah.
So, like, you had over 60 points in that game. The over-under, by the way, 54.5. So, yep. I tend to like the over in this game. I think the question that I would have is how much can Oregon change the defensive philosophy from what Tennessee did? That just makes more sense. Like Tennessee putting, they had ultimate faith in their corners, which whatever, I guess if that's what you want to do, put them on islands and they got cooked the entire night.
They had to switch to a zone.
And it's just like, why are you not playing a too high shell saying, right. Ohio State, run the football. We're going to bracket Jeremiah Smith. We feel like our front 5, 6, 7 can slow down your run game without having to put extra bodies in the box. Instead, they came out, they were aggressive, came after him at the line of scrimmage, and they just got torched in the back end. They didn't have an answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Oregon's going to have a much different defensive philosophy. I also think the game planning is there for them because I'm sure they were ready to play them in the Big Ten title game. It didn't happen, but they had their game plan ready to go for that game, thinking it was going to be the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just a, hey, we found out we're playing you, now we got to play you in 2 weeks, where we didn't know we were going to play you to begin with.
Right.
So these teams know each other very well. The key for me for Oregon winning will come back to the thing that I've maintained kind of throughout the course of the year, and especially late in the season, is that I think Dylan Gabriel's that guy. Like, I think when the game's on the line, if I need any of these quarterbacks left in the playoff to put together a drive and to come up with a score, he's the guy that I want to have the ball more than anybody else that's left in the playoffs, and Oregon has a ton of weapons to go with him. So they're going to have Birch back. They didn't have him the first time they played Ohio State. Ohio State is still down 2 starting offensive linemen.
Tez got more rest.
Like, they're feeling healthy. They're feeling great, and Ohio State's injuries at their key positions have been season-ending, and so that's the other thing that I would lean on. But I don't blame anybody for picking Ohio State. They looked awesome on Saturday.
I don't think it is. I mean, look, everybody's going to say the take, but it's the most obvious thing. A lot of this just hinges on what is Oregon's defensive line do.
Yeah.
How much pressure does Howard get put on him? How much is he, you know, forced to run it instead of maybe throwing a 20-yard pass to Egbuka or Smith or whoever that Tate, whoever the hell it is. And so, like, sometimes it's as simple as that, really. And if Oregon's defensive line gets past that mash unit offensive line the way Tennessee couldn't quite do it, you know, that kind of decides a lot of things. I'm with you in the sense of, I don't know if I say the winner wins the title just because there's so many games in this thing.
It's a really tough road, no doubt.
That you don't know. It might just be the NFL 2.0, right? Like, whoever's the most healthiest at the right time. But what I would say is it is a bummer it's at this point. That like, maybe Texas, Ohio State aren't playing, and you take on Dillingham as, like, the old assistant versus the coach. And, you know, there's an element of, I'm in no way a Duck fan. Everybody knows that. But I said this on the start of this tournament in this bracket, and I'll say it again. The way that they got treated for winning it,
for being 13-0,
even though nothing is a given in this thing, in this season, but the way that they got treated for it and rewarded Penn State for losing was just wild to me.
Yeah, who would you rather play in the quarterfinals, Boise State or Ohio State?
No, yeah, because I don't
doesn't
think
mean Boise State can't win,
gonna,
but
yeah, but I ain't gonna be the same as the last.
Who
one.
Would you rather play? It's not even close.
Right. On your jersey, have the Ducks designated their Rose Bowl jerseys yet? I haven't.
Don't think
they,
that they
are
have.
They bright blue or are they going? Are they going to go red?
I think they're going to go red. Just throw everybody off. Go red on red.
Well,
game.
Look, we give them grief on this show, but I said this maybe off the air or on the air. I think I flipped my opinion. Their entire branding has been because they've been willing to be different and
unique. There'll be something silver in there. There's guaranteed to be something silver in there.
They're probably going to do something that pisses off traditionalists, but also... part of the reason they're here as this is because of that. It's been interesting and exciting to the younger players that come up.
There is a unconfirmed rumor of what the jerseys will be, but nothing substantial official from the university. They released their cleats. The cleats are out.
What's the unconfirmed rumor?
It was the silver. They will always go silver helmets, seemingly, in the Rose Bowl because they like the reflection of the sunset.
Dome.
So they go the chrome dome. It was their green jersey with the O on the or the duck on the side. Like the traditional green that they came out with this year with the yellow collar and white pants.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting to hear. Okay. I'm trying to visualize that in my head. That's interesting.
I think it was white pants, green jersey, silver
chrome dome.
That was the jersey that they were.
You know, as long as
it's rumored to be
right.
online currently. Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see on that. The second half of New Year's Day, man, I'm going to be an absolute wreck. I am not excited. I mean, I am excited, but also just.
I'm not going to text you once.
Heartburn and everything that's going to come with that game is not going to be fun.
Won't text you once.
I'm flying. We're traveling.
You're traveling that day?
Yeah, we're going to Spokane.
Don't you text hours later. Sorry, dude.
No,
if they lose,
you're doing
okay.
No,
I'm not. I'm not doing okay. The second half of that, they do from Ohio State, Oregon, straight into Notre Dame, Georgia. New Year's Day is going to be a ton of fun, man. I can't wait. Let's get to a couple of odds and ends, including trademarks. RIP to a legend. One coach doing something incredibly shady. A couple of news and notes we'll get to next. Welcome back in. 8:37. Grinding away on December 23rd. Nobody else here today. Should we start feuds with the other show? Other shows on the fan? I mean, they were in here today, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, they were in the office today.
Well, I think we were out most of the week that they were in, though.
That's true. A couple of odds and ends in my award-winning odds and ends segment of things that this is our only show of the week, so I want to make sure we get to them.
I kind of wanted you to just do this every segment. Just kind of let it breathe for a while.
Let it play for a bit.
In the background. Yeah.
The Kansas City Chiefs cheated again this weekend.
Did they?
We had two different instances of it. One was on what I thought was a clear fumble from Patrick Mahomes that got called not a fumble and roughing the passer.
Boy, these roughing the passer.
Dude,
plays. What was the one?
What are we doing?
Maybe it was the Mahomes play. Or was there a college one where it happened?
They threw a flag on, it was at the end of the Commanders game.
They had one in that game, too?
They picked it up.
There was a college one. A kid got hit. Oh, it was the Ohio State game.
Yeah.
The number 97, the edge rusher, came off. And as Nico threw it,
he's
literally got the ball in his hand. The kid hits him, and because it looks like he's driving him to the ground, they threw the flag.
They gave him the pile driver.
These roughing the passer penalties, man. Face mask, get on it. Don't yank a face mask. The Mahomes roughing the passer penalty.
The ball was loose in his hand as his arm was coming forward.
And
that
he
was
got
a
hit
fumble.
On the shoulder pad / side of the helmet.
Yeah.
And then the Ohio State game. Like, we got to just stop this. It's ridiculous.
For the second time this year, too, by the way, the internet sleuths have found somebody other than the head coach, which, by the way, is not allowed in the NFL, calling a timeout. This time in the Kansas City game, it was their ball boy.
Well, he didn't call it. He threw the ref's attention.
He pointed his attention to
Andy Reid
because Andy Reid's fat ass can't get down the sideline quick enough. But that, how, like, what?
Bandaruski!
God, I hate that team so much. And they get away with everything.
They
can't stand them.
I sprayed line on the Texans, which was stupid, but there was a moment in that. That game was tight. I think the Texans either tied or taking the lead. They were up 10. It was 10-7. And there was a third down play. Mahomes threw it, and it bounced short of getting the first down. And I, in real time, as soon as the ball hit the ground incomplete, I went, here comes a flag.
Here it comes.
And then the flag icon pops up. Holding defense.
Oh,
automatic first. And I'm like,
Yes, like clockwork.
Every time this happens.
One fan base in the Northwest was upset. One of their highly touted young players who had a really good year, Kamori House, if you don't know that name, he was a linebacker for the Huskies. And his true freshman year came on strong. He was awesome for them late in the season, especially. He entered the portal a week ago, and he ended up committing 3 days ago to North Carolina.
Ah, the Belichick.
You're like, oh, what's going on there? That's interesting. He committed to North Carolina, and then yesterday it was reported that we all assume Steve Belichick is going to join his dad in North Carolina. And so many Husky fans thought, wait a minute, he was still on the staff
for Washington, recruiting players off of his current team to go play for his new team. So that, welcome to the new world of college football.
By the way, the most predictable thing was that Washington would lose in the D.C. there.
Yes, that just, yeah, knew that was going
to
happen.
Like my tier to Oklahoma.
Bernard Langer cheated in the PNC championship, and I will hear no other answers other than that he cheated. He fluffed the ball in the sand. It is a scramble, but the way he teed it up, go look at the evidence of the pictures. He was teeing off 120 yards in front of Charlie Woods. We had the Woods potentially winning a golf tournament this weekend.
We had Woods hole in one.
We had Charlie Woods hole in one. Yeah. Incredible content in the golf world. Great moment. And here comes this old bag with a cheating anchor putter, which should be illegal, teeing off essentially from the fairway. Mm-hmm. Give me a break. He won it for like the 13th time.
It's an exhibition.
It's not an exhibition to me, damn it.
It would have been better for your sport for the Woods to get that. Nobody paid attention to the duel again this year, the Bryson-Scotty. Yeah. Like, I didn't even know it was happening that
day. Well, it was on a Tuesday night when there was actually stuff going. I think it was had it on my TV. I don't know why cup final.
People are
it
done
was
with
the
this.
Same night of the cup
People
final.
People are done with this.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We're done with this weird golf thing that you think we're excited about. Not excited.
Make up with Liv. Figure out what they got to do to pay penance to get back with all the other players that didn't jump and take the bag and start having
actual
all
tournaments
your best
again.
Players yeah. playing in a lot of tournaments.
I respect your golf acumen. You are so wrong on this. This would have been massive for your sport. And it's a shame that they allowed this old bag to cheat
Thank you.
And win.
Thank
I know
you.
It's an exhibition.
It doesn't matter.
But
it's that real to
name,
me, damn it.
That name is golf. And if you have his kid not only hole out.
Thank you.
But win the tournament with pops and daughter on the bag.
He burned an edge on an eagle putt on the playoff hole, too. He was so close to making it.
It would have been big for your sport. They already had a moment with a hole-in-one. If they would have won it, it would have popped up even more on people's algorithms.
People were joking, can he win money from the PIP, the player investment program, or whatever, for that hole-in-one video? Because that's going to circulate probably more than any other PGA Tour highlight will this entire season.
Is his kid going to go to college or do the Corn Ferry Tour thing?
I don't know how old he is.
Well, they brought Q School back. You can go straight from Q School now. They brought it back.
So is he going to do
and
that?
And our local guy...
He's 15 years old, Charlie Woods.
Well, you know he's already got offers.
Or an almost, yeah.
If Stanford doesn't have an offer to him right now, that'd be egregious.
Yeah, he'll have opportunities.
I think
to
it's
go wherever
just how the level of emphasis that Tiger's going to put on a college education.
Well,
and a college experience. If he wants that for Charlie, if he feels like his game's good enough to go, and it's also, you know, if he feels like he can go and get success early on. Rather than go and grind, and because there's some 17-year-old kid out in Florida who's going to try to go pro
make
now.
Make the jump,
too.
Yeah.
So,
you know, this
you know
might
look good, by the way. Tiger looked good.
Stop. We're going to do it again. He's going to win the Masters.
Tiger looked good. He's in a cart.
He walked all 36 holes, Jason Swigard. Huh? Yeah. Golf show.
Here's the thing about this.
Sharp.
This might sound
Wedges
really corny and cheesy to you guys. When I watch their interactions, I just kind of tell myself, whether it be a lie or not, I just tell myself he's a great father right now in those kids' lives, and he's not his dad.
Yes.
Now, is any of that true? I actually don't know.
I don't know, yeah.
But I tell myself, man, what a dad.
Elon was there. He shared a hug with Elon.
I think they're cool.
Nordegren or whatever her name was. Yeah,
his ex-wife, yeah.
I'm just glad I could wedge golf into this show, and you guys actually played along with it. That was fantastic.
Well,
so thank you.
Saw a little bit of this. I watched. I didn't know it was on, and then I saw it on NBC.
No, we almost had our local golfer who played at Union High School. He was one of Harold's pupils as a youth.
Yes.
Alistair Dougherty was leading. He was tied for the lead at Q School.
Man.
Double bogeyed the first hole in the final round. And he missed it. He birdied 17. He needed a birdie to get in a tie for fifth and get his card.
Damn, that's so close.
And he piped the drive on 18. And then the adrenaline took over and he airmailed his second shot over the green.
Oh, no.
And I felt so bad for
You're
him.
You're that close. You're one
He's
shot
that
away from
close,
accomplishing your dream.
And he could have had his card. And it's just a cruel... Golf is such a cruel reality.
Yes. I drove past
any level.
Tri Mountain on the day of Harold's two-year anniversary that he passed, unfortunately. Where do you think he'd be at? You knew him better than I did, but I also had a funny relationship. Where do you think he's at on the take of... It's better for golf for the Woods to have won and Langer not to have cheated. You or me, whose side is he on, you think?
He was not the biggest Tiger fan.
Yeah.
He respected his game.
But for the sport's sake.
But for the sport's sake, he probably would have had a problem with Bernhard
teeing off from, teeing off 100 yards in front of a 15-year-old.
He would have said something like,
guy won like 37 times on the senior tour last year. He's unbelievable. Move his tee box back. Two more quick notes, and then we'll go. The Pac-12 has filed trademarks for the Pac-9, the Pac-10, Pac-11, Pac-13, and Pac-14.
I hope it stays at 10.
Well, who's going to be the next football team? They still need a football team.
How many do they have?
They have 8 plus Stanford. Or no, 8 total. Yes, 7 plus Gonzaga.
Yeah. Okay, 7 football members and then Gonzaga for non-football. So they have filed trademarks, so we'll see where the expansion goes. But that was a scoop that came out over the weekend.
It was the best when it was 10.
And last but not least, and we're not doing it much of it, so maybe we can carry this over to the final segment. Ricky Henderson passed away this weekend.
Do we need to talk about that a little bit? Probably.
Okay.
He was the greatest
of all time. It's crazy where his steals are and the next closest active player
is. If you want to talk about a record that's not going to be broken anytime soon.
Got to be up there.
Yeah. That's near the top of
Nobody's touching that. We'll get to that a little bit. A legend in the baseball world passed away. We'll send you on your way into the Christmas Eve next on The Fam. Look at that steam coming out of the helmet. This is real football, Sprague. None of this dome crap, all right? Outdoors, elements, baby.
Playoff game with Philadelphia, Dallas, and that was Nate Newton, who was seen on the sidelines of that clip steaming. And I didn't put it in the cut, but he basically was like, you can barbecue on that head. And I just kept thinking, God, I miss you. I miss you so much.
I do too. Speaking of passing away too soon, happened this weekend in baseball.
I was stunned by this.
Ricky Henderson passed away. 25-year career, debuted in baseball Major Leagues, 1979. He played all the way till 2003. One of the few guys, there's a lot of, you know...
That's crazy.
Players that, you know, obviously when we're older that we can remember. This is one of those that, like, kind of spawned
perfect
both of our lifetimes a little bit where it's like, we got to actually watch Ricky Henderson. Yeah. You saw all of Ricky Henderson. Yeah. Now, he obviously wasn't the guy in the last, you know... 10 or so years that he was maybe in 1990 when he was winning an MVP.
When you talk about athletes who were one of a kind and performed at the highest level in their sport, he's on a short list.
Very short list.
He was 42 when Ricky debuted, Swag was. That's crazy.
It's all-time stolen base leader, 1,406.
I'm going to make you
the next closest.
He is the all-time leader.
Give me the Wiener album.
And runs scored at 2,295. On top of that, to boast on his resume, he also hit the 3,000 hit mark.
Yep.
He had 297 career home runs. He was a career 279 hitter, which when you consider he played for 25 years is remarkable.
He was almost the true definition of a leadoff hitter.
Yes.
He's leading off in heaven right now.
That's right.
He's
telling Jesus how great Ricky was great.
You know, honestly,
I want to be around for that conversation with God.
God, that'd be so good, wouldn't it?
I'm the greatest of all time.
Look, we go through so much the NBA is going through this a lot right now. What's wrong with the league? Nobody's watching. Why is the NBA broken? Baseball goes through this constantly of like, why aren't more people watching? What's everybody's trying to hit home runs? Blah, blah. When he passed away, I was just, you know, watching old interviews and some of the funny stories that people said about him. Harold Reynolds had one where Ricky got hurt in a year in the 90s and he ended up winning the stolen base crown. And he said that Ricky Henderson called him and made fun of him for only having 61 stolen bases to win the title because he was like, Ricky would have had 110. Ricky would have had 120. So there's a lot of those great stories floating around. But my thought was, honestly, this is what baseball's missing. Not only in terms of a style of play and an intensity, but a personality on top of it. And he had the total package.
No doubt he is telling God how great he is compared to God, which is, you know, R.I.P.
God couldn't steal 100 bases.
You made me in your image, which makes me better. Can you guess the closest person actively playing to him in stolen bases?
Oh, God.
You can't do it.
There's no chance.
Starling Marte,
who
has 354. He is over 1,000 away from Ricky Henderson. This will never be broken.
No. Who's closest in runs scored, too?
Oh, God.
2,295 runs scored.
I don't know.
Freddy's closest active.
Look it up.
I don't know who's still around at the end of their careers right now.
Yeah, Freddie's probably not a bad one. Wild stuff, man. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Ricky Henderson.
R.I.P. to Ricky Henderson. Well, that's it. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody. Please be safe. Be with your family and friends and
leave those cookies out.
Eat those cookies.
Eat those. What?
What? We will be back next Monday.
Yeah, we will.
We're off the rest of the week. So
Monday, Tuesday.
We'll have a Hot Corner edition on Friday.
Okay.
I'll be in with the Hot Corner boys.
Okay. There you go. So Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks for being a part of our December 23rd show. We will talk to you next Monday at 6 a.m. Colin is next. You're listening to 1080 The Fam.